even keeping this simple order is an extremely difficult process, which I learned in the period of first month I was with him. He went on to say something interesting. He said, order was firm, though not rigid. Order and flexibility are complementary. When friends come, entertain them by all means. You don't have to throw out your friends just to show you're doing yoga. However, if you visit other people less, less people will start visiting you in course of time. If you write less letters will come to you. And a kind of a state will reach, you will reach a state which is suitable for you. Very simple thing. So just try this. Don't rush with anything, but slowly reach a point where you can do things which are comfortable to you. He says, I do not want you to cut out your social life altogether, but cut away the unnecessary. And you know what is unnecessary. And we do know usually what is unnecessary, but we are somehow obsessed with it and compulsively carry out many activities. So it took me a month of fairly painful existence to learn how difficult it is to do things of this kind. And after a month, after he had tested me out and made me understand the meaning of order, he started teaching me yoga proper. He had his own school. He did not follow Patanjali's system in exactitude, his own school, so I followed his school. He started teaching me three simple exercises, the asanas, pranayamas and meditation. And two other tantric exercises. One is called tratak, which is observing a flame for a long enough time. And fourth is a yoga nidra, which is a something of the kind you do every morning, like a shavasana for a long enough time, where you relax. So these are five things he taught me. Now, must say the first 3 months were extremely difficult. The yoga practices, and I'll talk about it a little more later, made me more aware of my own personality characteristics. You see, yoga makes you reflect on yourself. My personality characteristics, which were both good and bad, but the bad ones, normally we don't like to face. We have a great ability in our normal life not to look at our negative points. We push them away. But if you are doing yoga, you bet that these will become much more visible to you. I became aware of my physical infirmities, some of which are still continuing. I became aware of my nature, my impulsivity, my very jealous nature. These are all facts of my nature, or were facts, or maybe have changed a little. So I also have a fairly suspicious mind, and doubts arise in my mind quite often, and started asking myself, what the hell are you doing in a game like this? These questions will arise. Why are you doing all this? If at the end of this 1 year of work, nothing comes of your research, how will you show your face to others? These kind of doubts kept on appearing. So 3 months were very, very difficult. I became aware of my helplessness. All of us feel helpless at times, but I want to warn you that when you are doing yoga, or at least in the initial phase of doing serious yoga, your negative tendencies start looking much bigger than what they are. So my helplessness became a very great pain for me. It started appearing in my dreams. I'll just recite one dream to you, which dreams, like any other dreams, are silly things, but they show what kind of mental state one is going through. The dream runs like this. I'm walking on the road with my friends. Four people catch hold of some other people walking on the road and mercilessly chop them with cutlasses. This is the dream, that four people come and kill some people. The bits and pieces of bodies are strewn all over. The others on the road just look and go away. I try to scream, but my friends stop me, saying it will not help to scream. When I point out that what was happening was terrible and killers must be punished, I was told that it would not help to agitate because nobody is going to respond to you anyway. There was also a threat in the air that if I say anything, I shall be the next victim. This is my dream. Only a description of a sense of helplessness which got exaggerated in that first 3 months. So all these kind of experiences of exaggerated physical disabilities, exaggerated mental instabilities, painful dreams, caused a lot of depression. A depression resulted. And if my guru had not been there, I would have left the yoga. I am quite sure of that. And it is my feeling that many people leave yoga only because it becomes difficult as you go along, and that's why perhaps guru is necessary. Somebody to be there and guide you through this difficult period is an extremely necessary. Sometimes hold on to you. My guru was available to me all times of the day and night. I could go to him in the middle of the night also. And he would call me also at times. He was very, very closely related to me. And when people talk of doing yoga as a serious exercise, I always tell them, please go with some guru, and guru you like. Not guru who has a great reputation, whom you can get along with. Okay, that was the first stage of feeling very depressed because of a greater sensitivity to your own frailties. After that, there were days when I would become overconfident. A sort of mood swing started. And during this period, I would have sudden desires to eat a lot, or even becoming very sexual in my thoughts. This is the period of which I call mood swings, which lasted for another month or so. And after this period of 4 months or so, I passed on to a period which I can call as letting go. That's the word I would use. I became more and more able to just watch my emotions without reacting to them. My guru described these as adopting a witness attitude. That is, you're feeling things, but at the same time, you are witnessing the feelings rather than being involved with them. My thinking slowed down. There was less pressure of thoughts, less background chatter. My need to talk, eat and sleep became less. Now, these are factual experiences. After about 3 to 4 months of yoga, my need of sleep became only 4 hours a night, and that was good enough for me. I ate less. I lost about 10 pounds of weight during this period. I became able to postpone decisions. My need to consult others about my decision became less. My need to explain myself or apologize for mistakes became less. I became less sentimental. Some incidents during this period illustrate the state of my mind quite well, and I'll recite them to you. This is the third stage I'm talking of. First is the stage of being very depressed. Second is mood swings. Third is letting go. And in this stage, I describe a couple of incidents which can describe how I was. I had gone to see a friend at his invitation. When I reached the place where my friend stayed, I found him busy with somebody else in the room. He asked me to wait in the next room. When 10 minutes passed without his appearance, I took out a diary which I had and started writing down something. The friend came out after 2 hours and tried to explain that he was handling some urgent crisis with that other friend, and he said, "I'm sorry, I'm late." Now, I must tell you that before this yoga, I wouldn't have waited those 2 hours. I would have left and gone away out of pure anger. But here, instead of going away, I took on, started doing something else. This was very new to my personality. I have prided myself on my punctuality. Some of you are aware of that here. I keep to time. But previously I used to get very agitated when people were unpunctual. But there it was that this agitation wasn't there. Another incident. I have an internationally renowned scientist as a close friend. One day he rang me up and said that he had consulted an astrologer, and the latter had suggested floating 6 coconuts in moving water to prevent a future mishap. This is an internationally known physicist. Previously, I would have got annoyed and told off my friend for believing in an astrologer in spite of being a renowned scientist. Now we planned a trip to a stream 50 kilometers away, left at 4 a.m. in the morning, and floated the coconuts till 7 a.m. We giggled like school children because the coconuts got stuck in the muck, and we found ourselves 50 kilometers away from home watching people at their morning ablutions. So I'm describing this, a change of attitude to learn to sort of take things a little easy, enjoy them, have little fun. Two dreams during this period also contrast well with the dream I described earlier. There's a party, a number of children are playing, running about, knocking each other. I'm also playing. Suddenly I find my dog dancing gracefully. That's one dream. Another dream, I find a few people taking a freshly cut tree in a truck. My heart feels sad. I wonder how the tree would be feeling. Suddenly a tiger jumps out of the truck right in front of me, becomes nervous of the moving traffic. I am concerned about him. I hold him, pet him, and take him across the road. These I noted down 3 to 4 dreams every day. I've just picked out a few dreams to illustrate the state of mind. This particular stage was followed by a period, and now I think we are getting into a little serious psychology here. Getting into a period where I would have sudden flashes on my mental screen. Instead of thoughts as they are, which are linked with previous thoughts, you know, our normal thinking process is like a garland or a plait, you know, woven into each other. If you have gone through yoga for sufficient length of time, thought processes change and new thoughts can appear to you suddenly. And I could really saw them on a mental screen, and these thoughts would appear. Some of them very mundane thoughts, some of them thoughts quite meaningful to me. For example, a thought suddenly appeared to me one day, it's humiliating for me that my happiness should depend on the actions of others. Now, it just appeared. I think it's a very important thought for me. I have tried to use it afterwards. That is, why should my happiness depend on other people's actions? It is my own concern. I'm giving you an example, not of what thoughts appear to me, but the fact that meditation over a long time does create a stage where thought processes change. I also had some unusual experiences. I am a scientist and I am not too scared and afraid or embarrassed about mentioning things which might appear very quizzical to you. So I must complete the description. I did have some unusual experiences. Previously, I used to say to my friends, all of you have miraculous experiences. Why do not miracles occur to me? I never meet anybody who shows me something very interesting, miraculous. But during this period, things happened which did not look like just chance happenings. For example, and I'm sure you have had this kind of experience, I phoned up a friend whom I had not met for a long time. No one picked up the telephone. After some time, my phone rang. I had a thought filled with certainty that the call was from the same friend, and it was. Things of this kind. I'm not saying that something special happens during yoga which gives you this miraculous abilities. What I'm suggesting rather the opposite. What I'm suggesting is that this kind of strange occurrences keep happening in our life a lot, and we have learned not to notice them. And I think some interest, it will be interesting to research on what kind of miraculous thoughts processes go on in people's lifetime. I would say that such experiences occurred when my mind was still, when the thinking was slow and there was less background chatter. Now, yoga experience was not an uninterrupted bliss. There were ups and downs. I do not know whether it was my own rhythm or whether yoga itself is a discontinuous process with mind needing a rest before going on to the next stage. I have deliberately given you a story, a short story of the happenings during this 1 year, and now I describe to you what I did as the third stage of my work. I read my diaries at the end of a year There were about 6 or 7 thick books. I stood out of my experience and then again put on the hat of a scientist and tried to analyze, try to see what seems to have been happening. And this is what I'm going to tell you now. All yoga exercises increase self-awareness. There's no doubt in my mind about that. Asanas, the asanas you are doing, I want you to just think about it. Normally, we have a particular kind of habits of posture, habits of walking, so much so that we become unaware of our body. By deliberately putting your body in new postures, which you do every morning now, makes you more aware of your body, first of all. The physical body, the relationship between the contours of your body with the space around you. Pranayama increases awareness of breath and the related autonomic activities. Breath is an autonomic process, so are heart rate, so is the temperature regulation, so is the perspiration, and so on. And pranayama, I think, is a method of making you more conscious of your autonomic nervous activity. Meditation increases the awareness of our thoughts and feelings. And yamas and niyamas increase the awareness of our temptation and feelings. Take a simple thing like, don't tell a lie. We say it to our children very easily. But try not telling a lie for 2 days. And I'm sure you're going to fail. In these 2 days, you would have told a lie. And when you tell a lie, you then learn on what sort of issues you tell lies. As you accumulate, as you try to avoid lying, you become conscious of your lying. And through that consciousness, you become aware of what sort of temptations make you lie. What kind of fears make you lie. So I'm sure all the 8 limbs which we have talked about in Patanjali Yoga Sutras are methods, first of all, of making you more self-aware. Self-awareness induces self-examination. Very natural. Once you're aware of yourself, start looking at it. What does it mean? There is no choice but to look at oneself, and this process proceeds even when one is not actively involved in the practices. That is to say, even when I was not doing my practices, this kind of change of thinking did occur. By examining, necessarily your bad habits don't go away. But one tries to then do a little more towards achieving whatever one's ideals are. There is a slowing down of the thought process and feelings and cutting down of the internal dialogue. I want you to remember this term, internal dialogue. All of us suffer from it. There is a dialogue going on in the head all the time. As you're listening to me, you're talking to yourself also. You're saying to yourself, when is this silly man finishing his lecture? When am I going to have a cup of coffee? So on and so on things. So this kind of dialogues are all the time going on. I can assure you, from my experience, yoga cuts down this internal dialogue. Definitely slows down your thoughts and cuts down this talk. As if the brain becomes empty. The brain cannot be empty, but you feel as if your brain has more space. Consequently, I feel that, constantly a reduction in impulsive thinking and behavior. When the thoughts are slow, you are less impulsive. Because of the slowing down of the thought processes, there is a decreased travel into past and future. That's the next point I want to make. Again, normally, as you're sitting, your mind is rushing to the past, rushing to the future. But if your thought processes are slowed down, you do not do this as much and spend more time in the present. And if you spend more time in the present, you become more aware of what is happening around you. It's as simple as that. One of the experiment I did during this period was I used to walk on the road and count the number of things I had observed on the road for a period of 15 minutes. When your internal dialogue is going on all the time, you tend to slip out of so many things which are happening around. But if you cut down that internal dialogue, gradually your ability to notice things around you increase. You become more sensitive to situations around you. So there is an increase in perceptual sensitivity and hence greater attention to the events around oneself. While these events are registered, there is also a reduction in the conditioned responses to these perceptions in terms of associative memories, rise in emotions and stereotype behavior. Now this is another next point. Normally if you notice something, you immediately, the bundle comes out from your head, bundle consisting of your memories and your emotions, which makes you act in a particular way. But if your mind is calmer, this bundle is not there to direct your activity, and your activity becomes a little more autonomous. You tend to be selective in your responses than pushed around by your nature, let me say. Further, because of the reduction in the internal dialogue and the fluctuations of thoughts, there is as if more space in the mind to receive and process new information. Very crudely put, but I think it's something which is understandable. If there is less clutter, there is more space. And there is more space, you can take more information. And if you don't take more information, your decisions will naturally become a little more accurate. With the slowing of thoughts, I want you to note this, an ability to control the movements of your thoughts and emotions, success in the pursuits of yamas and niyamas, which you might have succeeded, there is a subjective experience in increase in willpower. I have to put the next page in. There is a subjective experience of an increased willpower, increased command of situations. And why is that? I say it is so because you have slowed down your thoughts. You feel as if you are in control of your thoughts and your emotions. You have done a few austerities. You are happy. You are feeling a little virtuous about your ability not to eat, let's say one day, or having kept a vow or something. All this adds together to feeling that, yeah, I can control myself. I can do things which I want to do. There's an increased sense of willpower. There's of course a feeling of relaxation, that's the simplest of things. I don't even have to describe it, both physical and mental. There is lesser need to talk, lesser need to move, lesser need to eat and sleep. The combined experience of relaxation, perceptual sensitivity, mental alertness, reduced impulsivity, and a sense of stronger will produce a sense of emotional high. If you have met people who have been doing yoga for some time, you are struck by one thing at least, and that is they are rather high, you know, they appear joyful, if nothing else, the more alert. And I would say that this is the result of combination of all these things which I mentioned earlier. Now, I want to tell you that during this 1 year, I was doing yoga practices for more than an hour, more than 4 to 5 hours a day, because I had nothing else to do. So I did something very intensively. But subsequently, half an hour to 45 minutes to 1 hour, something which I've been continuing. Not only that, I have learned to use yoga in my clinical work also. It certainly helps my patients relax. With some people, I use it as an exploratory technique to explore their emotions. And for some people, I have been able to use as a method of personality reconstruction also to change in their styles of living. I've also tried to use different yogic techniques for different kinds of illnesses. I feel one of the problems with schizophrenia, an illness which some of you might be aware of, is the person is too much in the mind and too little in the body. And by giving them purely physical asanas, many of them feel very calmed down. They become, by becoming more aware of their body and so on. So more research in that direction is taking place. It has been a difficult task to conduct such research and then to convey the results of this kind of research. If you ask me, is it not all a biased account, I will not be able to answer you very clearly. It could be. But one hopes that my training as a psychiatrist reduces the bias. That's all I can say. And another thing I say is, if 10 other people do similar work and come up to something similar kind of results, it would be of some interest then. So hopefully this kind of research would be followed or later on. Today my purpose was really to tell you that if you want to change your styles of living, your personality structure, methods and habits, it's not an impossible activity. It is possible. It is a slow process, it's a difficult process, but it's a worthwhile process. I don't expect anyone to do 4 to 5 hours of yoga every day. That would be stupid in the kind of world we are living in at the moment. But a short activity of this kind, or anything similar, something which helps you to explore your own self, explore your own mind, will help you change a little. So in relation to my yesterday's lecture on mental health, what are the characteristics of mentally healthy people, today's lecture is devoted to how, if at all, it's possible to walk slowly in that direction, not reach it. Thank you.
He says, you are talking about cutting down of the internal dialogue as if this was a great thing to achieve. In fact, internal dialogue is useful and helpful because then you can keep on doing other things and your mind is still attending to some other important business in your life. So why cut internal dialogue? Dr. Chaudhary, I want to answer in this way. I don't know how I will, whether it will succeed. There is a driven kind of thinking process and there is a chosen kind of thinking process. In our lives, 90% of the time, our thinking is of a driven quality. It is as if we are at command of thoughts, rather than thoughts at command of us. You check yourself. Sit down for 5 minutes, you will find many thoughts come to your mind, which you do not want. But they come because they are very powerful emotion. They carry powerful emotions. And the idea of cutting down the internal dialogue was to do away with these thoughts, which you do not want. I mentioned to you that if time comes when you have a feeling, that you can bring thought at your control. You think what you want to think. I want you to try 5 minutes every day in the morning or evening or afternoon and check what kind of thoughts come to your mind. Invariably, there are lots of thoughts which exhaust us. So if we can get rid of this driven quality of thought, our energy levels increase. We become more alert, more cheerful, more energetic. So I would say that yoga helps you in that direction. And if yoga has really worked on you, yoga or any similar process of self-training, I mean really self-training, you don't become stereotyped. I mean, if you, after doing yoga, if you start making other people follow you, then you haven't really done yoga. You know, you haven't done it properly. You are doing it obsessively. And that's why I suppose the teacher is very helpful there, who can point out your stupidities and faults, a good teacher. So, the whole idea of yoga is to become non-stereotyped, flexible.
Dr. Bhaktiv.
Sir, psychopharmacology and neuropharmacology. The point is that, as you have said, we know that certain drugs, also in certain conditions, they can induce some of these qualities.
Yes.
My question is that whether these observations are supplemented with any drug biochemistry or any drug neurotransmitter level therapy, these effects that have been reduced somehow. Is there any?
In my study, it wasn't done. My study, there was a neurophysiological check my professor of neurophysiology friend kept on checking my EEG records and my blood pressure, pulse, respiration records from time to time. That record is there. But in other people, there have been checks on the biochemical factors also. Precisely. Serotonin factors have been checked up and changes have been observed. As is, I think all that is very useful and very, very meaningful. My specialty is in a different branch. I want to understand the phenomena as such. And that's why my concentration is not there. But I can assure you that people who have done work in this field have shown biochemical changes in yoga also, which are not too different from what you can achieve through relaxation also. So relaxation exercise also produce those kind of changes, but changes have been noticed.
Dr. Kishan?
What do you mean that 30% of our sleeping period we spend on dreams, and we must spend on dreams. In people with whom, with the help of medicines, we have cut down the dreaming period, we ended up making them mentally disturbed. We do not understand the process fully, but it is well appreciated that dreaming is necessarily to clean up your brain also. It's a kind of a wipeout. A lot of activities happen in your head all the time, and dreams are the way through which they are thrown out. So dreams are necessary. In fact, there is a two different kinds of sleep we have. The EEG patterns in a dream sleep and a non-dream sleep are very different. The dream is biologically a necessary process. So when you say people do not have dreams, it's all that it means is when they wake up in the morning, they don't remember dreams. That's all. Search creativity in dreams, he's saying. This is okay. There are three questions. First is, what do I have to say about the creative experiences people have during their dreams? The point is, yes, there's enough evidence of that in literature, and I have no problems in accepting that. I am quite clear in my mind that our conscious mind, in fact, comes in the way of creativity several times. It stops creativity. It's the same driven thought quality, the internal dialogue which I'm talking about, which prevents creativity. During your dreams, that is absent, and so your creativity emerges. It's possible. So I have no problem with that. The second point is that some people can anticipate future events. I have read about it. Possible. Some people have had that experience about. But I don't know how to explain it. I do not know. Nor do my colleagues who work in parapsychology have been not be able to convince me. Then, what was the third question about? You see, my experience of samadhi is very limited. From a purely scientific point of view, all I have been able to understand is to go into that state of mind where the sense of self is not present. Now, beyond that, if by losing the sense of self, some aspect of your existence can move around elsewhere, is something which has been mentioned, even by Patanjali himself. In his Siddhis, he mentions that. I can't say anything about that. I don't think even if I do yoga this whole life, I'll be able to say anything about that. I'm caught up by my sankharas. So I don't have an answer. Even the third question, I don't have an answer. Can, by going into the earth, digging oneself in, whether it's better? Only thing I can say is, from a scientist's point of view, you cut down the sensory input. If you put yourself down underneath, you're cutting down the sensory input, and hence this permits you a little more easier for you to go into a samadhi stage. It should be possible. If I put myself in a room where there is no input of any kind of a sensation, I suppose it will be easier for me because my mind is not getting distracted. So that may be the answer, but not beyond that I can't tell.
Dr. Mohanty?
First of all, the relapses occurred during that 1 year also. It isn't that I was free of relapses. The relapses have occurred afterwards also. But I will, without undue humility, say that the kind of changes in my personality, which my aging would also have normally produced to a certain extent, I think changes occurred a little faster after having gone through this period and after continuing this. There are certain aspects of my desires and needs which changed fairly radically. And there is evidence in my behavior also. Those who know me know the changes. I am sure that without doing yoga, your life is going to teach you to improve your personality anywhere. We keep on getting slaps from the life anyway. We do something wrong, we get hit. But I have a feeling that, at least as in my experiences, I was able to do fairly radical things after I did this. Again, there have been relapses, there have been periods when I have not been able to do yoga at all. Even that has happened, that you can't do it. Or then you get back to it and you find that you start from where you left off.
Last question for you.
I don't understand this. You see, I don't know what lower self, higher self means. I can only talk what my brain thinks and feels. These are words used. This self-awareness, I was so very concrete. What I meant was awareness of my body and what is happening in my mind, my emotions, my thoughts. I do not have need, in my word, for an esoteric definition of self. I don't have a need. I can do without it. So why do I want it? But I'm sure some people who theorize on those lines use it. And I don't have any problem with them.
Friends, since last evening, I must mention to you what happened to me. I have been feeling extremely comfortable in the company of my friends. Does it mean that the fellow participants have been more mentally healthy and they are making me feel very comfortable in their company? Well, Dr. Kapoor, I must say that, you know, we have thoroughly enjoyed listening to you on this very interesting subject, namely mental health. We like the way you put it so simply, although it's such an important and complex subject, at least to me. And I'm sure that whatever we have learnt from you, listened to you this day and discussed with you, would lead us to Himalayan heights of mental health, but still have the tranquility of Shanta Sagara. For everything that you have given us, we the participants and also the other ladies and gentlemen assembled here, we thank you very much and give him a big hand.
I only want to say one thing in response to that. This description of 2 days is not a method of preaching. I am not interested in preaching anything, and I don't expect anybody to have changed the slightest bit after listening to those lectures, including Shankar. If one can do, some of you are scientists, other people are scholars, if you can experiment with some of these things and find out the truths for yourself, this kind of experimentation, if I've been able to inspire, I think I have succeeded.